Hello, everybody. This is Courtney Stanley, and welcome to another exciting episode of Dare to Interrupt, a listening experience where you have the opportunity to listen in on honest, unfiltered conversations with women who are considered to be the most influential and inspiring leaders in the world of events, hospitality, business, and beyond. Throughout their careers, these professionals have dared to interrupt conversations, their own comfort zones, and sometimes even societal expectations to hustle toward their greatest levels of success. I am thrilled to introduce you to today's guest, who is a powerhouse woman in the world of events and our very first guest of the year. Allow me to introduce you to Megan Henschel, Global Events Account Manager at Google. Megan, it's wonderful to have you on the show today. Where in the world are you joining us from?
Hi, Courtney. Oh, I'm so excited to be here. It's so lovely to chat with you. I am joining from Charlotte, North Carolina, which is our pandemic home for the time being.
Well, welcome. I'm honored to have you on the show today. And Megan was actually introduced to me by a mutual friend. So for any of you who know other powerhouse women in the industry that you believe should be a guest on the podcast, please always get in touch. Megan, I would love to just better understand how you got into the industry. Maybe share a little bit about your professional journey with us.
Sure. So I actually started my corporate career in technology sales. At EMC in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was a horrible salesperson. Sucked at that life. Was really great at relationship building and making connections and networking. Really horrible at closing business and like asking people to spend money on things they didn't necessarily need. So I actually lobbied my manager at the time to start to take on some of the logistical, very detail-oriented stuff from the sales team and started building content for regional sales meetings and planning those and managing those and executing. So that's how I got into events. It was totally unintended, but like a very serendipitous situation. And then after I realized that I really loved it and it was a skill set that was inherent to my being, I moved back to the South and planned events for a really long time with a company called LPL Financial out of Charlotte, North Carolina, doing, you know, events across the financial industry. So yeah, that's how I got started. It was accidental, but it was a beautiful and poetic thing.
I love it. I love it. And I actually used to live in Boston too. Well, just north of the city. I can't say that I lived in Boston because I was up in the Woburn area. But it was fine. It was a good time. How long did you live there?
I was there for 2.5 years. It was really cold for the Southern girls. Oh. I got out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there for about the same amount of time, but I'm from Michigan, so I'm used to the Arctic, so not a big deal. So I want to know a little bit more about your current role. So you work at Google, you're working on their events. What is that like? What do you do? What does your typical day look like?
Yeah. Oh gosh, it varies greatly. So just to continue a little bit about my professional journey. So I have a 2.5-year-old son, and during the postpartum blur that is having a newborn at home, I decided that I needed to switch up my career on top of all the other change, right? Just like brilliant. So I started just applying for dream jobs, what I considered to be dream jobs, and saw this role come across LinkedIn actually, and applied thinking, no way do I get this job. It was definitely skip level. And here I am. So my functional role on the global events team, which sits inside of the organization of real estate and workplace services, is to basically partner within each of the product areas across Google, understand how events drive business, how they build communities, and then use that understanding to inform a strategic vision for the global events team of really amazing, talented event professionals. Shout out to my team. So that's what I do. And before that, you know, I was planning individual events and basically doing experience design across learning and development programming, incentive type programming. So now moving into a role where I'm owning strategy for an entire team has definitely been an adjustment, but I freaking love it. I love strategy. I love problem solving. I love fixing. I love problem finding. So yeah, it's a really, really big, fun job.
I love that. And I'm like smiling over here because it just makes me so happy to hear when people love what they do. I don't feel like that's necessarily the most common trend amongst most professionals. So that's really great. I'm really, really happy for you. And obviously it's an amazing company to work for. It's definitely the company of a lot of people's dreams. You mentioned something that I find very interesting and I definitely agree with. And that's the concept that events drive business. And I think one of the fears that the industry has after being set back so far in 2020, moving forward, is that people, they've seen how much they can save financially. They've seen, you know, even how much time they can save. Unfortunately, you know, cutting a lot of staff that worked on their events, people are afraid that the industry won't make a big enough comeback for us to continue to thrive as a community. So I'm curious, I have two questions for you. One, did Google have to change up anything last year with, you know, the great pivot of 2020? What was that experience like? And then my second question is, do you think that the industry will truly be valued for the fact that events do drive business and that we will make a massive comeback?
Google definitely was not insulated from Jumanji, which is what I've been calling 2020, right? It felt like every month there was like some new drama. It's like, oh, we survived the rabid monkeys. Well, here come the rhinos, right? Like, no. Right. I had to completely reimagine how we showed up as a service organization last year. And we did all, just like everyone else, pivot exclusively to like digital first events. And we became fully digitized and we're powering tens of thousands of virtual events across, you know, our global workforce. One thing that's really interesting, and I'll share this, it's event activity was the first thing that was requested and approved via exception process to safely come back onto Google campuses. And that was done very methodically, obviously, and very safely. But there are certain very specialized skill sets and assets required to do events well. And that 2020 didn't change that. I also think that speaks to the value of events to Google's culture and to our ability to communicate to our customers and our external communities. I actually think, and this is a personal opinion and could be controversial, but I think events are more important than ever. We solve problems when we come together, and event professionals are the strategists and the mechanisms with which that is done well and effectively and optimally. So like we matter, and I think we're more relevant than ever, going into 2021 and 2022. So important that we bring people back together. And you know, not just physically, but, you know, philosophically and, you know, societally. So yeah, I definitely think we're going to make a comeback in a big, big way.
I definitely think so too. And I completely agree. And I like the perspective that you have about the importance of events and bringing people together and having meaningful conversations that do create change. I also think that people just miss being together. I think that's such a huge thing right now where the mental health epidemic is real and people being isolated is really, really hard. And, you know, I mean, being in the industry myself for a handful of years now, there were definitely moments where I didn't want to travel. I didn't want to go to another conference. You know, it kind of felt like the same song and dance and 100% took it for granted. And I feel like now, at least from my perspective, I cannot wait to go to the next conference that pops up. I can't wait to take advantage of the networking opportunities, to just have a glass of wine with people I haven't seen in over a year. So I think that there's also that emotional aspect as well, where people just are desperate for that type of community and connection that really is critical. It's really important to our lives and to our mental health as well. I'm sure you went through your own roller coasters professionally and maybe personally too in 2020. Was there some specific challenge that you faced that you felt like you were able to either work through or you felt like maybe transformed you in some way? I feel like 2020 has been an extremely transformative year for a lot of people. So I'm curious, did 2020 affect you in specific ways as well?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So I actually celebrated my 1 year, we call it a Googleversary. my 1 year of tenure at Google, it was like the first or second month of total lockdown in Northern California. And so I was very much still, you know, grappling with imposter syndrome and sort of like trying to figure out my place and how I fit in. I built a program from the ground up. My role was brand new when I took it. So there was just a lot that I was still trying to get my arms around and figure out and feel good about. And I think the pandemic sort of took away the luxury of self-doubt and waiting and hesitating and like overanalyzing, which, you know, is a personal flaw. and I just had to act, and I had to act for my gut and for my instincts, and it worked well. Some of the solutions that came out of, you know, those first few months in the pandemic with sort of me, you know, acting for my gut are solutions that are going to continue, and be long-term for our team. So I think, you know, that was a huge lesson, is like, listen to yourself, stop doubting what you're capable of. You're here for a reason. Go out and do those things. So that was incredibly transformative. And there's been a lot of self-discovery during this time, like spending a lot of time with yourself, right? That tends to just happen organically. But yeah, huge year for me personally and professionally.
I'm so curious because so many people struggle with this, and our audience is mostly women. Hi, ladies. We see you. We hear you. We know you're out there listening. There are so many women that struggle with self-doubt and imposter syndrome. How has that struggle affected you in the past, whether it's been personally or whether it's been professionally?
Oh my gosh. I mean, how much time do we have here? girls are taught from a young age to look for external validation, right? There are studies time and time again that show us this with data. And boys are taught from a young age that like they should just do. And we sort of wait for permission to act. And I think I've spent the majority of my life living that way. Again, you know, when I applied for backing up a little bit, like before I had my son Otis, I was incredibly fearful that I would be a horrible mother and sort of drug my feet, right? Starting a family. And, you know, once I crossed that hurdle, I think I sort of realized, well, wow, if I can do this, if I can manufacture a human and make it through these first 6 months, like I should just apply for that job. And then the job, I doubted myself for probably the first 9 months. But I think the more you do and the more you see what you're capable of and you flex those muscles, the more you do, right? Because you have the confidence to do it. Confidence building takes practice. But yeah, it's something I've always struggled with, and I'm incredibly fortunate. Hopefully after this conversation, I get to add you to the list, but I have an awesome circle of women who are, I call them my hype crew, right? They cheer me on all the time and encourage me to do big things and think big, and dream. And, they've definitely helped with that in the recent past with having my son and taking this role and moving cross country and, all of the many things that have happened in the last 3 years. But yeah, I don't think it's something we're ever done with as women. But I would love to build a world where the next generation doesn't start from ground zero like we have, right? Where we're teaching them from a very young age that they can do, and everything that they need is inside them, right? All that they're looking for is already there, and it will tell them exactly what they need to do.
Well, preach, sister. I'm with you on all of that. And you can definitely add my name to your list because you're already on mine. So I have definitely added you to my hype squad that I have too. Do you have any thoughts around how we can help other women to become more confident and how we can start to make that change where, you know, women or young girls or teenage girls feel like they do have everything that it takes? And really, you know, it could just be a lack of confidence to actually take those steps forward. What can we be doing now to help make that shift in our culture?
So much of it starts with self-work, right? And fostering that in your own body and your bones, right? In your own life, and then modeling it. I think that's a huge part of it. I also think that in the workplace, especially in corporate America, women have a lot of work to do to get to a place where supporting and lifting one another up is reality over optics. Like we actually need to be passing opportunities to one another and bringing other women along on the journey, right? Communal wins, communal success. The more women that are succeeding, the more women we'll have with strong voices at the table. And when women's voices are amplified, especially female communities that are diverse, change happens. And I think there's so much about corporate culture that is like dusty, man, and old. Like we need to get rid of it, you know? And that takes women actually working together and supporting one another and giving one another opportunities as opposed to competing. And that's cultural, especially here in the US, right? Like girls are taught that resources are finite. We're taught scarcity mindsets and that we have to compete for everything. And that is not true. The world is so abundant. Even corporate America is so abundant, and we need to be giving one another opportunities and not just trying to seize them all for ourselves.
I mean, I completely agree. I truly believe in collaboration over competition, especially between women. I believe that there's enough for everyone. I believe that we all have our own unique skills and stories and experiences and perspectives. And it really frustrates me when I see women in isolation, where they specifically turn cold and cut off opportunities in the pipeline for other women. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's been frustrating to see, even, you know, women who, this is the thing that frustrates me the most. And of course, no name dropping ever happens, but gosh, I just like really cannot stand when there are women who, you know, have a little bit of a platform in a community and they say all the right things, but then behind the scenes, they do the complete opposite. And it's so frustrating to see, I guess, that contrast between, you know, the intention or the spoken intention and then the behavior. And I've dealt with, you know, I've dealt with my own challenges behind the scenes with other women, whether it's been, you know, a boss, a colleague, a board member, whoever it is. I've definitely had my own experiences with that. But I truly believe, and I totally agree, that we get so much more accomplished when we work together. And we really need to do that. There's not enough women at the table as it is. So to finally get a seat at the table and then push away the chair next to you, I mean, oh, it's just so counterproductive. Yeah. Have you in your, I mean, it could be professional. It could also be personal. Have you had experiences where you've seen other women maybe pushing those chairs away and not necessarily being the most inviting or inclusive?
All the time. My entire career. I mean, starting in sales, there were, oh my God, I can't remember the exact number, but it was like a floor of, you know, 60, 70 sales folks. There were like four or five women. And it was hyper competitive and like just sort of nasty. And I, you know, and that's been sort of hit or miss throughout my career. I've had women who have been incredible mentors, and who have helped sort of unwind some of the like really bad mentorship that I've gotten from men as well. But like, yeah, no, I still think it's pervasive. I think it's more common than actual allyship. And like, That's what I would love to see us move away from is like friendship or ally theater in the workplace. Like, don't pretend, be authentic and support other people being their authentic selves too. So when we show up as our whole selves, and we work together in true partnership and friendship and allyship, like we get shit done.
We totally do. We totally do. And this also just, I was just thinking about like envy and jealousy and the reasons why sometimes women behave in ways that aren't, you know, necessarily the most progressive or productive for their women counterparts. And I really think that insecurity and jealousy play such big parts. But I also think, like you mentioned earlier, you know, building confidence is something that takes time. It's a skill that you hone, that you continue to grow. It's not something where you're born confident. That's the end all be all. And that's, you know, the most confidence you'll ever have. I truly believe that it changes over time, the more that you flex that muscle, like you said. But I would also say, looking at insecurity and looking at things like jealousy, I also think that those things take a lot of time and intention to try to work through and reduce and hopefully eliminate. You know, I had a girlfriend who reached out to me a couple months ago, and, you know, they just announced all of these industry awards. And she asked me the question, do you ever see those names and ask yourself the question, why am I not on that list? Do you ever just get like a little bit of that haterade juice flowing and just like that green monster, that envy, that jealousy starts to creep out a little bit? And my answer to her was, of course. Especially an achiever, there are definitely moments where I have to catch myself, where I start having those thoughts where I'm like, ugh, you know, well, why did she get recognized for that? Or why is he in that position? And I truly believe that that is human and normal, and that we just have to do the work to hit pause, to recognize what's happening, and then to just course correct and say, you know what, like, what can I do to better position myself, you know, for exposure or for these opportunities? And what can I learn from those people? And how can I transform jealousy into motivation and inspiration? And gosh, I just think that there's so much work that we can do. And I love your point around doing the self-work first in order to help the women around us.
Yeah, 100%. And I like, please hear me when I say I fall prey to that too all the time, right? But I think one of the really valuable lessons I learned in 2020 is like, I can't do everything. I can't be at everything, even if I would love to represent, you know, my thought leadership or my ideas or this, that, the other thing. I couldn't possibly, right? And so now I'm trying to, you know, tell myself over and over again, almost in a mantra type way, like if that wasn't an opportunity for you, that's making space for something else, you know? And I think so much of this insecurity and jealousy comes from that zero sum mentality, that scarcity mindset, that if someone else gets that opportunity, that means it's less for me. And there is space for all of us. There is enough work to do in this industry and in this world to go around, right? Yes. Like, plenty of work to do. So now I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I didn't get that opportunity. That means maybe that's now space in my life for something joyful, you know, mm-hmm. maybe space in my life for, you know, something really amazing with my kid or whatever. Like, we're not traveling right now, but, you know, something else, right? Maybe I read a book, who knows? But like, that wasn't for me. And if it doesn't come to you, then it's just not for you. It's for that person. And you should celebrate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am a firm believer in when one door closes, another door opens. And it's usually a better door. It's one that's better suited, you know, for your heart and your purpose and the path that you're really, you know, you're really meant to be on. So I totally agree with that. Okay. So I have a question for you. Prior to our conversation today, I asked you to describe yourself in one positive word, and you chose the word sensitive. What inspired you to choose that word?
So I'm an empath, and I've always been a pretty emotionally sensitive person. I was a theater kid, so if that tells you anything. A lot of my life, I've seen that as a negative thing or even a personality flaw. And I think at this stage in my life, having flexed that resiliency, confidence muscle a lot, I now see it as an incredible strength because it makes me very sensitive and open to possibilities, other human beings. And now in my current role with sort of looking at you know, overall strategy and really re-examining how we do experience design well, it helps me take a human-centered approach because I feel what other people feel. And I think I have an innate ability to put myself in other people's shoes. And while sometimes that feels really crappy because not everyone's shoes are shoes that you want to wear, I think it's a superpower in a way, and really helps me come from an empathetic place. And I love that about me now. It hasn't always served me, but I think it's because I wasn't always leveraging it or using it to the best of my ability. And now that I've sort of figured out how to, it's definitely a strength.
I think it is too. And I am also a very emotionally intelligent, sensitive empath as well. So I completely understand where people paint it as a negative trait, being too sensitive, too emotional, you know, not rational enough, however people frame it. And I love that you chose the word sensitive. No guest has chosen that word yet. And I actually did a double take when I was reading your response just to see if I had specifically said positive word and not just word to describe yourself. And I was like, no, I put positive. That was intentional that she put sensitive. And it's just, I think it's beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful that you chose that word and that you're so confident in your sensitivity and truly the strength that comes with that type of ability and connection to other people's emotions. I think it's beautiful. So kudos to you. I think that's probably one of the best words that I've heard anybody use to describe their strengths.
Oh, you're so kind. And thank you. I'm so glad that resonated with you. I actually think it resonates with more people than will admit it. Random story. I was driving to the store earlier and had to pull over for a funeral procession. And I broke down crying because I had this realization that like we have all lost so much in the recent past. Like 2020 was a year of loss for everyone, but that is something that connects us in such a powerful way. Like grief is such a raw human emotion and experience. And like we just all went through one mass communal experience of grief and loss. And like that's powerful stuff. And when we think about how we start to regather, for what we do for a living, right? Like understanding that and being sensitive to that is so important in getting it right and meeting people where they are and inviting them to engage in ways that make sense for them based on what we all just went through. So yeah, I'm so glad that resonated. That like that fills my heart, Courtney. Thank you.
Oh, no, I really mean it. I love this conversation. I feel like I just can't wait to meet you in person. I feel like you're a rock star. I mean, you're the real deal. I love everything that you have to say today. And I love that you own yourself, you know who you are for better or for worse, regardless of, you know, who sees it. And you just embrace it. You embrace the beauty of who you are. And I think that that's really wonderful. And just on the topic of grief and loss, I couldn't agree more. I think that 2020 was an incredibly heavy year, you know, for everybody, not just within our community, not just within our industry, but it was a very emotionally trying year for people. And I think looking at it from the perspective of, wow, this is an opportunity for us to really see each other and to move forward together and really understand each other better, I think that there is such an opportunity to do that, especially at a time where, you know, it's just crazy. It's so divided right now, especially in the United States. And I just think more of that sensitivity and more of that empathy and grace is just so needed right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think if we take the best of what we learned in 2020 and apply it to our individual disciplines and domains, like our whole culture changes. Our whole situation changes for the better. So I'm optimistic. I know we were talking about optimism at the top of the call and saying like 2021 feels a lot like 2020. So far. I am optimistic. It might be a slow ramp, but I think we're on our way to a better, brighter place based on the fact that we're bonded right now. We're more tribal than ever coming out of this. And I do think there's a desire and a craving to come together and take care of one another.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. All right, sister, if you could share one final piece of advice with other women in our industry or even outside of our industry, what would you say?
So we already talked about actually lifting up and supporting other women. So I'll do a secondary one. That would be my number one. But I do think also do you and own it. You are the expert. Someone is coming to you to help them get their event, their experience right. And I think there are a lot of new things. There are a lot of new considerations going into 2021. But trust your gut and know that you're the expert. And do you. I think if we all show up in an authentic way and own ourselves and our capabilities and our worth, that's powerful stuff. I think this industry coming together and owning our own capabilities and sharing our talents and skills in a meaningful way, we bounce back so much faster.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. And we'll have to dig into the topic of worth another time. I know we touched on it a little bit today, but that is one topic that I am truly obsessed with as I've been doing my own self-discovery and self-work. Thank you so much, Megan, for being on. And thank you so much for sharing all of your insight and knowledge with everybody listening today. And of course, audience, thank you all for listening. Share what you learned from this episode with me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by following at Meetings Today and at Courtney on Stage. And be sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to Dare to Interrupt on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and more. Stay daring, be kind, and do you, my friends. Until next time.